Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another great edition of Talking Tigs. I am Scott Gerard, and joining me, as always, is Tommy Johnson and Daniel Zollinger. Got another, I guess, somewhat positive week for you. I mean, the Tigers got another win. They're 1-0 now on the season. We look forward to Vanderbilt next week, but we took care of business against South Carolina, winning 20-10. Probably could have been more for the Tigers anyway, but I guess that's part of what we're going to bring for you folks today. But before we do, wanted to check in with Tommy and Daniel. Hope you all had a great weekend. I mean, it was another good weekend for college football. Some upsets, some more coaches gone, but the Tigers somehow find a way to get back in the winning column. And I mean, what is it? 6-1. I mean, this is just crazy. This is probably where some of us thought we would be, but probably not how we saw it happening. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing?
Man, good to be with you on another edition of Talking Tigs, our famed podcast. celebrating another LSU win. I feel like, you know, it's just like I'm celebrating an LSU win, but I don't feel like much celebration. So it's kind of a weird place to be in. Especially when you watch the rest of college football, there's just like upsets galore and wildness in the top 10 rankings. LSU now moves back into the top 10 with some fallout. But other than that, good to be with you and good to be talking about a Tiger victory.
Yep, it's nice when LSU gets that win over a Southeastern Conference opponent, one that we had a tough time with last year, and it was another close game. It really probably shouldn't be. We left maybe 20 points on the board, but we got the win, and so we can move on from there, being an underdog to Vanderbilt, which is the first time that that's happened in, I assume, quite a long time. So excitement going to Nashville this upcoming week, and yeah, I mean, LSU, it was a must-win game, and we got the W, so the season still chugs along and back in the top 10. So plenty of things to be positive and negative about, which we'll get into now.
Oh, yes, we will. Thanks for putting it up on a tee, Daniel. I mean, I will say overall, at least for the Tigers, I mean, we did see something different, right? I mean, there did seem to be a little bit of a change in our offensive play, at least. I mean, you could see Garrett taking shots down the field, and you could also see we had some good running plays, but obviously still a long way to go. But I guess you have to give credit where credit is due, and I don't know, maybe Nuss just finally feels better, or maybe they tweak something. I mean, even though it seemed like South Carolina's defense was just with the pressure all night and we were just lucky to get it off. But I mean, we did all right. We won by 10, could have won by more, as Daniel said, probably should have. And I mean, we know we had two touchdowns on the goal line that we just literally dropped the ball on. And that was that. I mean, that could have made it 34-10, which is a little bit closer to my score, but I don't know. I think that kind of goes back to what Brian Kelly was saying like a week or two ago, and I'll get into more on that later. But overall, I mean, you did see some improvement with the offense. Defense was pretty much the same good defense we've seen all week, and, you know, special teams, no issues there, I don't think. But, Tommy, what would you say, man? Did you feel like you could look at this game and say, okay, yeah, I mean, they probably worked on something in the bye week, or Nuss maybe finally felt better after the bye week. Still didn't see Michael Van Buren, although we did kind of see him warming up a couple times because Garrett was, I mean, he was limping bad. It was like Zach Medenberg in that Alabama game where he was just crawling on the field. But it wasn't that bad. But still, it's like we still only saw Nuss, even when it was still kind of going slow in the early on. So what's your assessment?
Man, I got the chance to be at the game. And you know, that has its positives and negatives, as far as like I'd be interested to see kind of what y'all saw from watching it on TV, you know, with a little bit of a better angle on some things and replay and all that. But for me, I thought that you're right. Nussmeier looked at least from the throwing perspective, he looked healthier. Now, he I mean, like you said, it feels like after every drive, he was like hobbling off or, you know, gimpy, kind of walking around and stretching out or something like that. But the balls didn't seem to float as bad as they have maybe, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. That being said, I mean, he had two bad picks. The decision making is still bad. We had some bad drops. I did not see a lot from this passing from this offense in general, this passing offense or the running attack that looked that much improved. You know, we had 100 and something yards rushing, but one of them was like a breakoff run from Durham, I think. Or was it Barry?
Juwan Johnson had the 56-yard long run.
Yeah, so the guy who hasn't played, who just started playing running back last week, had our best run of the night. So that was cool. Then he has a crucial fumble on the 3-yard line when we are there to score. I don't know. I mean, I just didn't see. I think the only real positive I saw. Tre'Davious Green looked like a legit red zone target. I mean, I was on that first touchdown. They did everything that if you go back and watch that play, they did everything that you want to see out of them. They shifted they shifted him kind of out. He was picked up by a smaller linebacker. Instant mismatch. He runs a route, turns his back on the linebacker, and just kind of like, you know, like a basketball player, like he was, like, you know, a former basketball player that he is, kind of blocks out the defender, and they throw a jump ball for him and he catches a touchdown. Like, great. I liked that. But other than that, I mean, bad drops from Chris Hilton, middling rushing attack, a bad fumble from Juwan Johnson, and two awful interceptions.
Yeah, I'll give my pluses and minuses. The main plus is the defense, which has been extremely solid every year. This game reminded me kind of a repeat of the Florida game where we should have just won by more. Like we outplayed them, but we let them hang around for no real reason. The only thing that was good was South Carolina was almost shooting themselves in the foot more than we were with their own turnovers. And I think they had like 15 penalties or something. It seems like they were getting flagged every 2 seconds. And I know that they were showing shots of Shane Beamer like exploding on the sidelines. Yeah. They kept getting these flags. But yeah, the defense held up strong, putting 5 sacks on Lenora Sellers. They might have had a worse offensive line than us, which is kind of crazy to say, but we were getting after them, and our back end play was solid as well between DJ Pickett and Mansoor Delane, especially just really locking it down on the outside. South Carolina only had the one touchdown, which came on a missed tackle and then a bad angle by Tamarcus Cooley at the safety position, and then the guy was off for 70 yards in the score. But other than that, it was pretty much locked down. On the offensive side, I do think there was some improvement overall, especially in the rushing game, with in terms of yardage and kind of chunk plays, that big one by Juwan Johnson that we mentioned, and then Caden Durham getting a little more into a rhythm as well, especially in the second half. And Nussmeier, he had a few runs. I was like, how is he moving like this? Especially after he was coming up like he had just tore his ACL or something half the time, and then he would like sprint for a first down. So you got to give him credit for that kind of tenacity and willingness to keep going through the pain. But I think it was coming out of the second half, because Nussmeier had really gotten shook up right before halftime. I was like, is Van Buren going to be starting the second half? But it was not, and Nussmeier stuck it out through the rest of the game. I don't know if that's wise or not, at the risk of a more serious injury. The positive being Tre'Davious Green and Kyle Parker as well. At the emergence at the receiver position. The red zone offense, horrible, other than the Tre'Davious Green kind of ISO jump balls. Like, can we just run that play every single time?
You know what? We tried. It didn't work every time.
Yeah, like, that's true. We've been throwing it to him more times this season. That was the first one where it really locked in. And then, yeah, because the first two possessions, because we got the ball at their like 15 right away because they fumbled on their very first play of the game, and we only came out away with 3 points. That was annoying. And then the next one was the fumble at the 1-inch line. It's like, oh my goodness. And then Nussmeier with the tough picks as well. So certainly some self-inflicted wounds that need to be cleaned up if we're going to win more consistently over this tough next 3-game stretch.
And I think also just the well, I texted this to y'all, like, great for Juwan Johnson. That was a great run, very electric, kind of, you know, got the stadium excited. But like, that's one that years ago we have a stable of running backs and all of them run off and score.
Like, yeah, I said it like when he was halfway there, I was like, he's about to get chased down. And then he got chased down at like the 15.
I mean, it I was watching this in real time, and I was sitting on the side of the stadium, and so he's coming towards me, and I'm just like, run off and score. Come on, run. And it's getting slow. It's like, why can't we have a legit running back? If this is LSU, this isn't take your pick, Towson State. Like, we have, why is our number one, or depending on the day, number one or number two option at running back a converted quarterback who's a converted defensive back? Like, this guy's played three positions in college, and now we've said, you know what, we're going to settle you in at running back. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. I think it's disappointing. And he shouldn't have been run down there, but I guess it ended up okay.
Yeah. Well, and now Brian Kelly said, I think they're going to, this week in practice, they're going to look at like just a direct snap to a running back, something different just to mix it up. And I'm like, okay, well,
great.
Good for them for trying new things. But yeah, it's like, we don't really have either an offensive line that can constantly create holes for the types of backs that we do have, which are pretty quick and shifty. Like, we don't have a, like a Michael Ford or Spencer Ware or like Leonard Fournette, that if there's not an open lane, he can at least push a guy like 4 or 5 yards forward with his momentum just because he's a brute force. We don't really have that right now. Like you said, our third leading back's converted, who's probably like our fourth string quarterback if we really needed it. So there's that. I mean, the offensive line, there's still some issues there. Although, you know, it was a very good defensive line from South Carolina. I mean, many people have said that we were facing probably at least one guy that could be a top pick, you know, in the draft next year. But I don't know. You could see certain, you know, if you just watch a lot of the tape, there's certain sides where just the pressure was constant. I don't know if it's like why they have certain guys in. You know, they had Curious Kane too, and I don't know. It's just really interesting how they assemble this offensive line, which has kind of been just kind of, you know, plug and play when you need to. But it's like we're still not finding that correct combination. I remember going over this a few years ago, but at the end of the season, they were like rated the best line in college football. But we still haven't really established the run, I don't think, at least enough to where people are going to take it seriously. I mean, just, it was, South Carolina felt different though, right? It just felt like they were just sitting. They weren't just sitting back. They weren't just sitting three, like some of our last few weeks. Like they were.
No. They were definitely not hanging back the way that Ole Miss did, with right. Florida did. But even still, they were not bringing the house, and they still got pressure on Nussmeier. Right. This offensive line is just, they're not great. The offense in general is just not great. And we haven't seen a ton of improvement.
I wanted to ask you guys this because I saw something at the end of towards the end of the game. You could just see Brian Kelly was frustrated. I mean, you could see at one point he had like a play sheet in front of him. So, you know, I'm wondering at what point they did start mixing up some play calls in the second half, because I don't know, it kind of did look a little bit different. But do you think that, A, maybe Brian Kelly's like, screw this, I'm going to call some plays here too. Why not? But I don't know. I feel like there's just no sense of urgency either. Like, you could see Kelly visibly frustrated, like, come on, let's go. Doing like the move it faster. Come on.
And at the end of the, at the end of the, into the third quarter, early fourth quarter, we did the thing again where we run the clock down and then take a timeout for no reason.
Yep.
Which, I mean, luckily it didn't matter, but this game was not, we were not leading by 35 points. That timeout could have mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering, is that, I think that's something they could work on, just because there's no, like, our offense has the pace of a sundial. It's like, we, even if we get a big play, we walk down there, we run that clock all the way down, get the defense time to set up. Even if we get another good play right there and get like 7-8 yards, we slowly walk up, and it's just, everything's just so slow. It's like, we're never going to catch anybody off guard, even in just the happenstance, if we're just not trying. It's like, I feel like that's one thing they could work on. Work on pace. Let's just run it down their throat. We can't even sub guys off. Why not?
I just don't, what if they're not, they might just not be capable of it. Like, can Nussmeier, what if Nussmeier can't really run tempo, and he, and like, I mean, we know he has a hard time getting everybody set up. You speed that up for him. You would, like, I see what you're saying, Scott. It's like, okay, well, you're having a hard time getting lined up in the play clock, so we're going to speed it up. But maybe it's that he's having a hard time getting the play in and getting all the right adjustments and tags and shifts in. And I mean, we do a lot of that. We do a lot of, like, we'll line up an empty and then shift a guy back to the backfield. And then we put shift the tight end from one side to the other.
We saw Nussmeier go split out wide that one play, Juwan Johnson wildcat. I was like, what's happening right now? I thought we were going to do like a double pass, but then it didn't happen.
Yeah. That was another one where it was pretty close to where I was sitting. Like, it was coming towards my section, and I saw Nussmeier go to wide receiver. I was like, okay, this is not real. Like,
reaching deep in the bag on that
one. Just call it. This game needs to end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then with the inexperience. Go ahead.
So that happens to us, and we're just like fumbling around, and we can't even line up and play. But then Alabama gets to line up their right tackle at like quarterback. Like, he's playing a skill position now. He's like he has a little screen package. He played quarterback last night and ran it in for a touchdown. I don't know. It's just kind of like, I mean, this was supposed to be, we were getting Kelly and Saban was retiring, and this was supposed to be like the, you know, our time to take over the mantle.
Yeah.
Herbie's on the downswing. LSU is ready to come, and it's like, no,
a lot of people are on the downswing.
Yeah. A lot of people on the downswing, and like, no, but the rich just get richer. Bama's, you know, having fun, having their tackle like have a significant part of this offense.
Right. Well, this is what I was going to ask you guys also, is it's something Brian Kelly said, I think a week or two ago. He said, well, it's like, we have guys that do good things, but then, you know, there's just no cohesion. It's like that one play where the offensive line actually held South Carolina. Nuss had enough of a pocket to throw a good strike to hit Chris Hilton in stride, but he dropped it.
He dropped it.
Or the offense goes all the way down the field, gets to the goal line, and we have a chance to score a touchdown, but our running back drops it. So it didn't, you know, it just seemed like coach speak when he said it before, but I get it now. It's like, those moments, I feel like, you know, a few years ago, maybe in 2019 anyway, it's like, we would have caught that ball. We would not have fumbled on the goal line, and our quarterback would have not have done a run pass option and just thrown into double coverage with an easy pick on the goal line either. So I just, I see what he's saying now, but it's like, how do you,
but what, I think the question is what causes that? Is it all, it's not all just bad luck. I don't think it's all like, right. Like, that's just not at this point. And so you have to think, like, is it mentality? It's not talent. I mean, I think we have talented players. We have athletic freaks. Trey Des Green, Chris Hilton's, one of the fastest players, Barron Brown, who I was very high on early on this season. I mean, we saw a nice play from him last night, but he's been quiet the whole season, pretty much. Nick Anderson's been quiet most of the season. Aaron Anderson, who I'm 99% confident that I saw him dressed out in warmups yesterday, ended up not playing, was in street clothes. I think that there's something about that 2019 team, and I mean, I think it started with Burrow. I think it started with, you know, they talk about the during the summers, like the marathon throwing sessions that he would have with Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and all the other wide receivers. But I don't know. There's an it factor. I don't know many teams have it this year. I think that this is a little bit of a the parity in this college football season is very high, as we saw with like an Oregon team that I was very high on last week losing to Indiana. But then again, I think we just don't have that it factor.
Yeah, and they showed a stat during the game. I believe it was Nussmeier was 1 for 14 or maybe 15 on passes with like 25 plus air yards. So basically the deep ball, he was like 1 for 15 on the season. And when compared to last year, he was more around like the 40% range. And so, yeah, we were used to Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels just launching it down the field, dropping it into the bucket. And maybe we were a little bit spoiled with two Heisman winning quarterbacks in the span of 5 years, but there seems to be a lack of connection and a lack of precision, both on the passing with Nussmeier's accuracy and decision-making, and then our wide receiver's ability to create space and be on the same page with the quarterback. And that's not something you can fix overnight, but that just makes it frustrating to watch, because we're used to this explosive offense that moves the change, keeps things going, and puts 7 on the board at the end of the day, instead of grinding down the field and ended up kicking a field goal or turning the ball over. And that's what's tough to watch over the last few weeks for LSU. The defense is good enough to keep us in basically any game. The game we lost against Ole Miss, we were in it till the very end because of the defense. We just need the offense to do something for us. And that's going to be especially important against another really talented offense next week against Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia, which I guess we can get into here in a second.
Yeah. But I mean, just thinking of, you know, what we're going to have to face next week, I felt like the defense did a pretty good job of holding Lenora Sellers, at least mostly in check. I mean, our tackling looked god awful for several stretches of the game, and they just were going up and down field, but they, you know, kind of like us, they couldn't really close the deal. But other than just the bad tackling, I felt like we kept him at bay for the most part, because he probably really could have killed us. With, you know, like we only gave up that one big running play, and that was it, you know? So kudos to the defense.
I thought the defense early on looked, it was a down, like a little bit of a down day for us, but they really showed up when it counted. That Mansoor Delane play at the very end of the game, basically one-on-one that he, you know, swats the ball away, was huge. I give our defense maybe a B minus. I don't think it was the best day we've had. I think that they, especially early on, had some trouble, but this defense continues to be one of the best in all of college football, and is the reason that we are still in this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's see if they can keep us in it next week, because we're going to have just as tough a task on the road it's a morning kickoff, so it's Central Time anyway. But I don't know. I feel like we've done pretty good with those in the last few years. But, yeah, we're definitely going to have our hands full with the NCAA seventh year man trying to go for 8. Maybe not really anymore, but still, just Pavia, and they held their own with Bama at least for a little while until the score got lopsided at the very end. But we have another week. I don't know if our quarterback's fully healthy now or if he still has recuperating to do, but definitely still more things to work on. I don't know. What do you guys think that? I mean, obviously their offense is probably as good or better than some of the last few weeks we've faced.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Vanderbilt, they've only beaten LSU one time since 1957, which is kind of crazy. And they've only beaten us a few more times than that overall. But so they've traditionally been, I don't know if you want to say the laughing stock of the SEC, but definitely a perennial cellar dweller. And now they've been on the upswing these last couple of years with Diego Pavia as their quarterback, all-star passer and runner. He's the team's leading rusher as well. So Vanderbilt's a 2.5-point favorite at home, which is a little bit weird to think about as an LSU football fan and just knowing who Vanderbilt is. But they played as close in Baton Rouge last year. LSU won 24-17, and I feel like it could be close again this year. They hung with Alabama for pretty much the whole game. That's their only loss. And then they crushed common opponent South Carolina in Columbia. So very solid, and I think LSU is going to be okay in this one, but the Commodores, like we said, have a very high scoring offense. They're averaging like almost 50 points a game. And so that's going to be something that will be a significant test for this defense. And we'll need Nussmeier to put up a few to match that. I don't have too much on the scouting report. They utilize their tight end Eli Stowers a lot. And that's not really a wrinkle that we faced too much so far. And it's not really something you see a whole lot in the college game in general. So that'll be something that hopefully Blake Baker can game plan for over these next few days. What are you thinking about this one, Tommy?
I mean, what stands out to me, like you said, LSU is a 2.5-point underdog going into, this is not joking, Vanderbilt. That's concerning. ESPN gives Vanderbilt a 60% chance of winning, which I think is also interesting. I agree. I think that the matchup with Stowers, the tight end, is going to be interesting and kind of an X factor for this defense, because I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, we haven't really faced like a very tight end heavy offensive attack as far as defense goes. The one thing that can concern me, and I hope it doesn't happen, maybe it'll prove me wrong, but with Harold Perkins playing that star position, I'm wondering if they'll kind of make him cover the tight end, and I just don't know how he's going to be in coverage. I haven't seen a ton of great, really great coverage from him this year. One thing that while kind of digging into to the Vanderbilt matchup, Vanderbilt's like main defensive weakness is, luckily enough, in the middle, like the intermediate passing game that we've talked about for weeks now is being the only thing that Nussmeier has success in. There's drag routes that come across the field, crossing routes, slants, out routes, things like that. They allow that these passes from like the 8 to 15 yards area about 52% of the time. So I think that bodes well for us, especially I hate to put it on like one player, but it feels like we really need to get Aaron Anderson back. Mm-hmm. I think if he plays, I thought he was going to go yesterday. Like I said, I saw him warming up, he was in like full, I mean, I really, I don't know. I'll have to double check, like maybe on Twitter or something, if somebody said the same thing, but I saw him in full pads, like catching balls and stuff. So I think he's progressing at least. He didn't play yesterday, but I think we really need him back. Pavia is going to be a problem. But this defense, I mean, he'll be the best quarterback we faced this year, and he'll probably be the best quarterback we will face other than Ty Simpson, the Alabama quarterback. I think that I agree. I think LSU will get it done. I think it's going to be close. And I think I don't know. I think this is a concerning development where LSU is an underdog to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, well, before the season started, this one was like, I don't know if you'd say an automatic win, but probably like 80% plus like win for LSU. And now it's we really need to win this one because we got A&M and Alabama coming up after that. And if you're going to Alabama with two losses already, that's not an exciting thought for your playoff prospects. And so we need to at least go 1-1 in these next two against Vanderbilt and A&M to have a chance, preferably 2-0, obviously. but people have been tossing around 30. It's kind of like a magic number for the LSU offense. Like if they can put up 30 or more, then we have a really nice chance to win with this defense. Obviously we haven't done that in a single game this season other than Southeastern Louisiana. And so that's tough. I would shift that even a little bit down more. Like can we just do 25 or something and then have our defense take care of Vanderbilt? Given how strong they are on offense, 25 may not be enough, which is a little bit scary because I don't know how many touchdowns this offense has in them in any one game stretch.
I think that the 11 a.m. kickoff favors Vanderbilt. I think it's going to be a weird, you know, I would imagine there's no energy in that stadium at 11 a.m. in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance for us to come off flat. It looked like I think we came off like the atmosphere yesterday at Tiger Stadium was, especially to start off that first half, was about as good as you can get with that in a game that's not Florida, Alabama, one of the big, real, real big rivalry type games. That atmosphere was great, loud, full stadium sold out. So I think it'll be the complete opposite at Vanderbilt, which to be honest, for them being the home team, they're used to kind of playing in that stadium. I think it favors them. So I look for us to come out flat. I agree, Daniel. I think that, I don't know if we can break the 30 mark. I feel like we win. I feel like we win. I think it's probably like LSU 24 or Vanderbilt 21.
I'm not going to go over 20 because they've only done that what twice. So I'm going to go 20 LSU. I want to say 17, but I'm going to say 19, 20 to 19.
Ooh.
2019 LSU or Vanderbilt?
LSU.
Okay, nice. 19, tough score to get. I'll scoot. Well,
maybe they score and then go for two to like win the game.
Or a safety, like we give up a safety just to run out the clock late in the game.
We almost gave up a safety yesterday.
Yeah, when we were backed way down.
That was terrible too. Side note.
I'll scooch it up just a little bit higher. I think LSU does win, but close. I'll say 27-24 LSU. And 27 is pretty optimistic for the man, touchdown.
We scored 27 points. This is high. This offense is high flying.
They're making it rain.
It could be a pick six too. You never know.
You know what? No, that's a good point. Yes. Like Pavia. Now Pavia had some trouble against Alabama. I could see him. Let's say the defense shuts him down. He starts trying to make things happen. Clock is time is running. It was working against him. Look for Mansoor Delane, Tamarcus Cooley, DJ Pickett, and the rest of this defense to come up with with some opportunistic turnovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll keep us in the game. I mean, that's what helped us with South Carolina. It's kind of like the Florida game where it's like they were just begging for us to blow them out, but we're just, no, we just like to sit on our defense and just kind of fumble around on offense. We'll probably try and get a touchdown, but we'll just settle for field goals. It's okay. We're not going to change anything because it's working so far, but that's what we're looking at. So we've got our scores out there. I mean, I feel like it would be good to look back at some of the other scores because there was a big shakeup in college football. I mean, not as much as – I don't know. I guess the biggest surprising game for me was Indiana on the road beat Oregon, yeah. Who was – to me, it was like one of those teams like, all right, well, there's Ohio State. I'd say Oregon, maybe Ole Miss because they're undefeated. Like just one of those teams where you're like, all right, well, they're probably definitely going to be in the playoffs. Just depends on their seeding, but – man, who is Indiana? And then you still have Georgia Tech that's undefeated. Like you said, Tommy, A&M took care of business against Florida. I mean, there was a upset with Penn State and Northwestern, which I don't even know how to equate that for Tiger fans that wouldn't know, because I mean, Northwestern is in their conference, but that would be like Vanderbilt 20 years ago, maybe.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and that was enough for Penn State, or at least whoever's helping them make decisions, because James Franklin's gone now, which is crazy. And it just I think somebody else fired their coach. I think it was Oregon State, who's like 0-7. Understandable. But, you know, there's firings before. Then you still got Billy Napier, whose team is 2-4. I guess they're giving him the full season, no matter what. And just craziness happens. I mean, there were some other upsets too. You know, LSU did move up. I mean, Texas came out from the unranks to not just beat Oklahoma, but they, you know, they kind of did so handily in their annual rivalry. And yeah, Alabama took out Missouri, but Missouri gave them all they can handle. I mean, it was 17-17 for, at one point. Missouri came back, and Alabama's just, I think, the better team right now. Well, what's some other guys that you saw? Some others that you guys saw?
I would say that Alabama game, Ty Simpson had a little bit of a down game, but he still continues to look like the best quarterback in college football. We will be colliding with him in, 4 weeks? So something to watch out for there. A&M, a team we'll play 2 weeks from now, looking very good. Their momentum is on their side. I'm still a little bit skeptical just because it's an A&M team, and we have seen them get to these points where they're a top five team trending in the right direction, and then they fumble it. So that's something to monitor, wait and see. But they put up 34 points against Florida. I think that our matchup will be a tough matchup for us against A&M. Mm-hmm. On the Penn State thing, it is crazy. First, the loss to Northwestern, like you said, stunning. This is a team that 2 weeks ago was the number two team in the nation, I believe.
Yep.
And now they're losing to a really, really bad Northwestern team. Northwestern team that got their clock cleaned by Tulane earlier in the year. And then James Franklin getting fired, which would y'all believe that he is the number four or number five winningest coach in college football over the past 4 years?
Winningest in terms of just number of wins or winning percentage? I believe it. He's been pretty consistent, 9 to 10 wins at Penn State over the last, I think he's been there 12 years, so that really racks him up. But it is shocking to, 15 days ago he was yucking it up on College Game Day when they were there for the Oregon game, and then now he's got the $50 million buyout, so he's not too sad, but really just the lightning quick fall from grace. And, I mean, it can happen to anybody, I guess.
It's really insane. I think it's Kirby, Dan Lanning, DeBoer.
I know Kelly's got to be in there.
No, he wasn't.
Really?
Yeah, it was one other. Who was the other one? I can't remember.
Ryan Day.
Yeah, Ryan Day. That's what it was. It was those four. And then Franklin.
Interesting. Yeah, on the games from this past week, I mean, there was really, to me, only three teams that have been like super solid week in, week out, which is number one, Ohio State. They got a good win against Illinois, Miami, who had the week off, and then Indiana, crazy it is to say, who went to Eugene and handled Oregon pretty well. So Kurt Cignetti has the Hoosiers just kind of going nuts, building off a playoff appearance last year, and now they're a top three team when they were just about a joke in terms of football most of the time. Other than that, Alabama did pretty well at Missouri. That's not a bad team to beat. And then Oklahoma, John Mateer came back from his hand surgery real quick, and it may have been too soon because he threw, I think, three picks, and they looked a little bit lost in the Red River shootout against Texas. So Texas may be back again. Arch Manning didn't have a disastrous game, so we'll see if they somehow make a return to glory after a few tough losses. And then what else? Ole Miss, a team that we lost to, barely hung on to beat Washington State.
Yes.
That was a little bit scary to see. Doesn't make our loss look much better, considering Washington State held Trinidad Chambliss in check. So, but the crazy things can happen. And I didn't watch any of the Tennessee versus Arkansas, but that was another kind of shootout game that the Volunteers made out with it at the very end. So a lot of action, not too many crazy upsets, but close games top to bottom. And setting up what looks to be a pretty exciting week this Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I'll add is two things. One, did you see Lane Kiffin's halftime interview where he goes, they said, what did you tell Trinidad? He said, why don't we leave that Division II stuff in the locker room?
Back to Ferris State,
which was hilarious. And then also on the Oregon, the Oregon loss was really pretty pretty stunning for me. I thought they looked the part for the first 5 weeks of the season. Good win for very good win for Indiana going into Eugene. Disappointing for Oregon, but I think you'll still see Oregon there at the end of the season as a contender.
Yeah. Speaking of contenders, because I mean, there were some other games where the team was ranked in, I don't know, maybe they started the season like gangbusters, but I'll start with Florida State, who is now with three losses, lost to Pitt. They started great, had that win over Notre Dame, but nothing since of note. I mean, so you got to wonder if Mike Norvell, how long his wick is going to burn. Then you had Colorado knock off Iowa State. You had Utah knock off Arizona State. Arizona almost took out BYU. Then you had USC beat Michigan, who only had one loss up to that point. Yeah, Arkansas made a good run of it. They just weren't able to come out with the win. Auburn was giving Georgia all they could handle. They were about to go up 17-0 until they called a touchdown back. And I don't know, that was just a bizarre game. I think Georgia's kind of lucky to come away with that one. And I don't know, they just don't look like the same stout team they used to. So I don't know. I'm thinking all this, like you were saying, Tommy, parity. Yeah, I mean, we could lose another one in these next few weeks. Maybe we lose another one after that. But basically, if we were like 9-3 at the end of the regular season, I don't think I don't think we would necessarily be out of it. I still wouldn't feel good about our chances of even doing anything. But everybody else is losing. It's just one of those crazy seasons, and no holds barred, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think 9-3 is right on the edge, though. I don't have much confidence in 9-3. We need a lot of help from everybody else. I think 10-2 is really the safe number, the safe number. But you're right. I mean, you look around, like even this next coming week, like Alabama at Tennessee, Bama could take a loss there. Ole Miss at Georgia. Ole Miss is a number five team. Georgia's ranked number nine. Like that's a tough matchup for them. USC Notre Dame. So a lot of top 25 matchups. Utah but BYU. So they're ripe for disruption.
Yeah. Speaking of disruption, just because we were just talking Georgia and it triggered. Did y'all see Kirby got them to take away a timeout that he supposedly called?
Yeah, yeah. The fake timeout where he looked like he was signaling for it, and then when the referee turned around, he said he was clapping. He's taking a page out of
that's
Jason
just
Garrett's playbook, the clapper.
Yeah, that is so egregious. Like, how does that – like, come on, SEC has to do something. I mean, it was the touchdown call where – obviously, the ball, it looked like it crossed the plane. I'm a Georgia guy. It looked like the ball crossed the plane. Like, I'd have been yelling my head off if they tried to pull that against Georgia or LSU, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Do you think it's like the league protecting their whatever, you know, their brands, whatever? But it just doesn't seem – come on.
Now, not even – it wasn't just that he was clapping. Supposedly, he was clapping to tell the refs – that Auburn was clapping to try and throw off the snap count.
Okay. Oh, okay. Maybe
like that, because of course now quarterbacks don't, they don't, even say hut anymore. They just clap. And so he was trying to tell the refs, they're clapping.
Yeah, we had the issues with the fake timeouts kind of led by Ole Miss and Link, or fake injuries, excuse me,
yeah,
led by Ole Miss. And now we're going to have the fake timeouts. So there's more and more wrinkles, kind of the football metagame. How much stuff can you get away with?
Exactly. Well, I mean, that was pretty much it for this past week. Any, like you said, Alabama, Tennessee, we got to go on the road against Vanderbilt. There's some more good games coming. Someone's got to lose, right?
Yeah, well, this week is the one where they start off with the Tuesday games. We got games literally every day. I wouldn't say there's anything premier going on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. The number two team, Miami, hosts Louisville, which could be good. Yeah, but then on Saturday, a number of good matchups, including the LSU-Vanderbilt at noon Eastern, 11 Central. The big kind of triple header there is that one. And then Ole Miss going to Georgia at the 2:30 kickoff, and then the evening is Tennessee-Alabama in that big rivalry, which usually produces some fireworks. So definitely tuning in to all of those. And then, yeah, you called out the Holy War, Utah versus BYU, who had to escape in double overtime. And then one kind of weird one, Oregon at Rutgers in a Big Ten conference game, Oregon going cross country to Rutgers off that tough loss to Indiana. So we saw Penn State with a quick slide after being on top. So could the same thing happen to Oregon? I think they're a little bit better team than that, but could be a tough spot coming there. And then Texas Tech is a team that's looked kind of quietly very good over the course of the season, and they go to Arizona State. So we'll see if they have a chance to be kind of the first stumbling block for the Red Raiders, who are lining up that Big 12 playoff spot kind of in their crosshairs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Another one to watch out for, I think, call out, like we mentioned, or like I mentioned earlier, Texas A&M number 4 in the nation. But we've seen they have a tendency to slide in the past, have a hiccup. If I remember correctly, it was 2018, maybe 2019. Texas A&M similar. No, it wasn't 2019. It would have been 2018, I think. Texas A&M looking good. You know, they're on the way. This is their year. They're really making a name for themselves. And they go and they play an Arkansas game. I mean, an Arkansas team. Led by, gosh, what was that? Who was that quarterback they had from Sardis, Mississippi? KJ
Jefferson.
KJ Jefferson. And they played it. Is this game being played in? No, it's okay. They actually played this game at Dallas Cowboy Stadium, but this week they would be playing at Arkansas Razorback Stadium. Either way, Arkansas is a 7.5 point dog at home, but Bobby Vitrino's got that magic. Maybe look for a little upset there.
Yeah, I think Arkansas do. They're just, they've taken everyone, even with their losses, like, dude, they're always losing by like either one or two scores. So that they're definitely dangerous. I would say, and by the way, did you know that this past Wednesday that started like 29 straight days of football?
Yes.
That's just crazy. I mean, they're just doing that to do it, because why are we playing football, like college football, on a Tuesday other than just to hit 29 days straight?
Why not? Like, I'd rather watch some random Mac game on a Tuesday night than not. You know what I mean? Like, if you're just gonna bury it on a Saturday afternoon when nobody's gonna watch it, why not give it to me prime time on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I wonder kind of about the logistics of those games. Like, do the players think it really sucks? Like, if you play on a Saturday and you got to suit back up like 2 days later, like on the road or something,
that's true.
That could be rough. But I guess if you want the spotlight, you gotta do something about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess also if you think about it, like if you're gonna play in the NFL, that's your goal. You kind of do that in the NFL. They'll play you on short timeline, because you'll play on like a Monday and then have to play on a Thursday, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
One other interesting game. Yeah, I think that Texas A&M at Arkansas. I mean, if A&M wins that one, then I'd say, all right, well, A&M might be the real deal this year.
Yeah.
Also, Texas at Kentucky. We know Kentucky has been pesky. Texas, I mean, yeah, it's like they're down and up and down and up again. So, I mean, they did fine against Oklahoma, but can they do it 2 weeks in a row? on the road, no less.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, wait and see on March. I don't know if he can do it again.
He can still win the Heisman.
Yeah, really. I was thinking about that.
Well, speaking of, if Ty Simpson, if his last name was Manning, don't you think everybody would have been like, just give it to him already?
Yeah.
We should give him the Heisman already.
I mean, the counter argument that a lot of people have been saying is if he was like Arch Smith, he would be like buried on the depth chart at this point.
Yeah. It's not true. I mean, both things are true. Right now, odds on favorite for the Heisman, Carson Beck, basically tied with Ty Simpson. Fernando Mendoza from Indiana, next in line. Then Julian Sayin, the Ohio State standout quarterback, who's been good. I would say good, not great. Along with Jeremiah Smith, both at plus 1,500. And then Marcel Reed, the quarterback from Texas A&M, the long shot right now at plus 2,000. I think it's Simpson's to lose. I've watched a lot of Miami. I've watched a lot of Alabama. I think Simpson's the better player.
Maybe. Well, I guess we'll find out in the next few weeks. That was pretty much it for college football, right? Unless you guys had something.
No, that was it on my end.
Okay.
One other just little coda on the LSU South Carolina game. Was the fake punt as weird on TV as it was in person? That really like kind of saved like the penalty on illegal procedure that they gave to South Carolina for that punt kind of saved us because they would have converted on it.
Yeah, that's probably the maddest I've ever seen Shane Beamer.
Yeah. I mean that was a weird moment in the game. I would love to. I want to go back and watch it, like watch the replay on like a on the game because I was there, so it didn't, you know, it just happened. But I saw him line up, and I was like, this is strange. But I mean that between that play and then Mansoor Delane's pass breakup, that's really the game for us. That wins us the game.
Yeah.
Game of inches.
Indeed. Well, I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Next week, we'll, of course, have the score against Vanderbilt and all the other action in college football and off the field, too. Who knows if there's going to be any more firings. I bet we see at least one firing next week. And not saying who, it's just keeping the trend going. Yeah. 29 straight days of football. Guys, it was a pleasure doing it with you again. To those listening, stay with us. Get up early. Have your hotty toddy or your Bloody Mary, whatever you do Saturday morning, get up for the game. It'll be over soon, and you can relax for the rest of the day. But until then, stay safe, stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.